Tommy was sitting on his favorite seat in the school bus, the one exactly over the rear axle. He liked that particular seat because by sitting right there, he could feel through the springs and upholstery every bump and rattle of the route. It made the boy feel as though he were an extension of the vehicle. He became another black and yellow piece of metal riveted into the chassis. Sitting in that exact seat, feeling like a part of the bus itself, gave the trip to school an exciting air of reckless adventure. As he rode to his fifth grade homeroom class, Tommy relived once again the events of yesterday, his 11th birthday. His parents had thrown a big party for him with candles and a cake. A wonderful afternoon that climaxed with the breaking of a piñata. Tommy's mother had at first blindfolded him and then put a baseball bat in his hand. The boy started swatting the air with the piece of white ash wood. The bat smashed through the piñata with a crunchy thunk. A river of hard candy pieces, wrapped in all the colors of a summer sunrise, came cascading to the ground. The children in the circle flowed joyously inward to sample every flavor in the candy waterfall. Yes, thought Tommy, it had been a marvelous birthday. The bus pulled up to the long, low, ochre-colored building, which was the middle school in Valencia County, New Mexico. The building was only a couple of years old. The county had been forced to build the new school in order to accommodate the influx of people who had begun flocking toward that region of the country. It was the mid-1960s in the United States, and air conditioning had become a commonplace technology in American homes. A steady stream of people began moving there to build homes on the high desert ground, something now made desirable by the invention of refrigerated air. Tommy's father was a contractor, and his business had flourished with the tremendous demand for houses in the bedroom communities of Valencia County, just outside Albuquerque and Santa Fe. The school bus finally rattled to a stop in the parking lot, and the driver pulled the stainless steel lever which swung open the metal and glass double doors at the front. The children rocketed down to the parking lot and passed the principal, Mrs. Swanson, who met every school bus every morning of the year, regardless of the weather. After homeroom, the students began their regimen of morning classes, a rhythm broken only by a half hour of freedom during the recess of 10 a.m. Then the bell rang for lunch at 11:45, and Tommy went back to homeroom to pick up his blue, red, and green lunchbox with a picture of the Incredible Hulk blazoned across the top. The boy trotted down to the lunchroom at the far end of the hallway. He greeted a group of his friends, many of whom had been at the birthday party the day before. Tommy had only just sat down at their usual table and opened the buckles of his lunchbox when a crash made him jump in his seat and turn around. Gazing toward the noise, three tables across the room, Tommy saw a group of 6th and 7th grade boys standing with their arms crossed, smirking at a small brown child who was seated by himself at the lunch table. Tommy knew that the little dark-skinned boy was called Lito. Tommy did not know that this was short for Emanuelito, nor did Tommy know that Lito was the elder child of a Mexican-American couple who lived about a half-mile from Tommy's house. There were many of these brown-skinned families who were now part of the newly established communities which were springing up all around the Southwest. They usually earned their living either building the houses for which there was now such a demand or cleaning those same houses once they were finished. And these descendants of the original inhabitants of the southwestern U.S. were not always welcomed by the families of the engineers and accountants and lawyers who had so recently migrated to the area. In fact, that tension between the Native American families and the new arrivals had been the cause of the crash Tommy had heard echoing across the lunchroom. One of the more infamous 6th grade bullies had just tipped Lito's lunch tray to the floor. The little boy's meager meal of beans and a tamale now lay in ruins near the overturned half-pint carton of milk that bled white onto the tiles. The 6th graders were hungry for Lito to make some sort of response to their bullying, but the small brown boy just sat there with his head low, tears leaking down onto the empty lunch table. And then, not really thinking about it, Tommy did something that would forever change his life. He reclosed his lunchbox, and without saying a word to anyone, he got up and crossed the room to the table where Lito sat. He reopened the buckles of his lunchbox, and Tommy took out the large chicken salad sandwich that his mother had prepared for him early that morning. Placing one half of the sandwich on Lito's tray, Tommy said, "I can't eat all of that. Please share it with me. My mom really makes the best chicken salad." One of the bullies made a move toward Tommy, but just at that moment, Mrs. Swanson entered the lunchroom. With a sixth sense born of decades in the classroom, the principal immediately caught the tension at the table where Tommy and Lito sat, two sheep in the middle of a pack of angry dogs. The bullies immediately melted away. Mrs. Swanson walked over to the table, saw the ruined food and milk, and said, "Is everything all right?" Tommy replied, "Yes, ma'am. Lito dropped his lunch tray, but Mom gave me too much for lunch today, so we're going to share." Mrs. Swanson didn't say anything. She just gazed at Tommy for a moment and then looked over to the table where the bullies sat studiously avoiding her gaze. The principal then looked back at Tommy and Lito and cocked her head for a moment, and through a smile filled with the wisdom of her years, she said, "Well, that's good. I'll just go and get J.B. the janitor to clean this up. You boys enjoy your lunch." Tommy and Lito didn't say much over lunch that day. When the sandwiches were finished, Tommy took out the small bag of hard candy left over from his birthday piñata. He emptied the candy out onto the speckled formica surface of the lunch table. And the two boys spent the next few minutes sampling different flavors of brightly wrapped pieces of hard candy. Just then, the bell rang to signal the beginning of afternoon classes. Leto asked Tommy in a soft voice, "Do you think it would be okay if I took one of them home with me?" Tommy said, "Sure. I've got plenty more. Here, why don't you take the rest?" And he pushed the little pile of candy across the table toward his new friend. But Leto shook his head, reached out and picked up just one piece of cherry-flavored candy wrapped in fire engine red paper. Leto put it in his jeans pocket. His chocolate-colored face was shining in gratitude, and he said, "Thanks a lot, Tommy." That was the beginning. Over the next few weeks, Tommy and Leto spent a lot of time together. They ate lunch together every day. At first, Tommy's friends avoided them, but slowly they began to drift toward the table where Tommy and Leto sat. And after just a few weeks, Leto had become a part of that magic group of children who grow up and make their world together. Tommy discovered that it only took about 7 minutes to ride his bike from his home to the little house at the end of the gravel road where Leto's family lived. Leto joined in the baseball games that the neighborhood boys played in the community ball field after school. He proved to be one of the best shortstops in town, and soon Leto was always the first pick whenever they chose up sides. In fact, when Tommy and Leto graduated high school in 1970, it was baseball that got Leto a scholarship into a college called Loyola in a big city named Chicago. Tommy went on to study business at New Mexico State in Las Cruces. He went into his dad's building business, which he eventually took over and grew into a company with 6 different offices around the country. During college, Tommy and Leto kept up with each other through letters and a phone call every couple of weeks. And after graduating from New Mexico State, Tommy sat with Leto's family in the front row of the big cathedral in Santa Fe, where Leto and 6 other young men, dressed all in white, were ordained into the Order of St. Ignatius of Loyola to become Jesuit priests. Leto and Tommy remained the very best of friends. In fact, it was Leto who, smiling hugely, officiated the marriage of Tommy to his senior year sweetheart Denise in the little church in Valencia in 1976. The wedding was just before Leto left for his new ministry with the brothers in the Jesuit mission to Central America. And it was Leto who flew home to New Mexico for a few days to christen the 2 twin boys born to Tommy and Denise in March of 1978. Tommy and Denise, along with their twin boys, sat with Lito's family in the front row of the little church in New Mexico once again, 2 years later in April of 1980. But this time, nobody was smiling. In church that day, the remains of the Reverend Father Emanuelito Maria Juarez, Society of Jesus, were prayed over and laid to rest. You see, Lito had been one of the 40 people murdered in San Salvador at the end of March that year. They were gunned down in front of the National Cathedral as the civil war in El Salvador climbed toward its bloody zenith. After the funeral, back at the little house at the end of the gravel road in Valencia, Lito's grieving parents and younger sister, Maria Cristina, received the many family and friends who, in hushed tones, provided what comfort they could. It was there that Maria Cristina asked Tommy if he could step outside with her for a moment onto the tiny brick patio beside the small adobe house. Outside on the patio, away from the crowd of mourners, Lito's kid sister gave Tommy a little box. She told him that before returning to El Salvador and knowing full well what dangers might be waiting for him there, Lito had left the box with instructions to give it to Tommy if he should not return. Alone on the patio, Tommy opened the box. He took from it a small brown envelope on which his name had been written in the hand he knew so well. In the envelope was a note on Lito's personal stationery. My dearest friend, if you are reading this letter, it means that I have gone on to be with my Lord. Do not grieve for me, for I am now in heaven having lived my life in the way God wished. But I did want to leave something for you. In fact, I'm giving back to you the greatest gift you ever gave me. Tommy, the value of things is not in their price, but in their cost. In the Gospel of Luke, when the Good Samaritan stopped to help a stranger on the roadside, he was doing so fully realizing the unknown risks and responsibilities in which he was placing himself. The Samaritan knew nothing of the stranger he had found lying in the road. Yet he was nonetheless willing to tell the innkeeper to which he took this wounded stranger, "Look after him, and I will repay you whatever you spend." With his act of kindness, the Good Samaritan was in so many ways placing his own future and his entire life in jeopardy. He was opening himself to limitless liability, offering to pay whatever was necessary to heal a total stranger, a man he had never met. But this good man did so with the full faith that God will always provide. This then is the true value of a thing. Priceless gifts, the ones that cost the most, are those actions which lead us to completely place ourselves at the mercy of God, knowing that our Heavenly Father will always love and save us. And so, in the box with this letter, you will find the most precious gift you ever gave me. Though neither you nor I knew it at the time, this gift forever changed my life and set me upon the path God wanted me to follow. God be with you always. Your faithful friend in Christ, Lito. When Tommy had finished reading the letter, he looked back into the box in which the letter had been placed and saw there a much smaller black velvet box about 2 inches square. Tommy drew out the smaller box and opened it. There, on a piece of white silk, though it had faded a little with the years, Tommy saw a small piece of cherry-flavored hard candy wrapped in paper, which was still fire engine red.